The following interview was recorded by the Gawler Broadcasting Association as part of the Gawler Oral History Project.
Welcome to the Gawler Civic Centre on the 30th of October 2025. Today I'm having a conversation with Barbara Mullen, a textile artist and educator. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you very much, Jill.
You have had a long textile journey. How did it all begin?
Well, I had to think about that, Jill. And I think it actually started with my mother having a great interest in clothing. And when I was about 12, this was entertainment. We'd go through her wardrobe, and she was a great buyer of clothes, and she would throw out the ones she didn't want. Anyway, about 12, I started thinking about constructing clothes for myself, and I liked the material, so I would chop up the ones that were rejected. So I think this is where it started.
Did you have any other influences besides your mother?
Well, no, not as far as the actual initial. That was the initial
one. Yes.
But once I'd sort of shown this interest, my auntie sort of taught me how to use a machine, and even though I'd sort of played around with my grandmother's treadle, this was a few years earlier, but that's sort of where it started. And then Dad actually bought me a machine of my own, so that's where it all started.
Okay. What sort of things did you make as a child? Did you start off with just clothes for yourself, or did you start off with doll's clothes? Or
yes, doll's clothes.
Yes.
Yes. And then I soon progressed to clothes for myself.
Yes.
And I had a great interest just chopping up these pieces and, you know, putting them together. And
did you wear them?
Clothes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Most definitely.
What would have been a favourite sort of a style?
I can't actually remember what they were, but they certainly, I wore them, that was for sure.
Did you use any patterns?
No, I tended to. Well, actually, I did after a while. Mm-hmm. I used patterns because I realised that, you know, it needed a little more than my chopping up the material.
Did you have the good old simplicity patterns?
Yes, that's where I started. But I was soon altering them to suit myself.
That's always a good idea, isn't it?
Yes.
And be a bit more creative with them than the plain pattern. Yes. You said to me the other day that you went to an art school.
I did go to the art school. This was earlier. Mm. This is where because I've always had an interest in art, and I actually started there when I was 8, and this is before the clothing bit. So, no, I had a great deal of fun mixing colours, and I still do that.
You do, yes.
So, no, that's a long, long thing. And I have taken that to painting material.
Recently, yes.
Yes, yes.
And combining painting
and
textiles, stitching,
yes.
Embroidery, yes.
And that's I use that fabric that I have painted.
Now, when you went to the art school, apparently it was the North Terrace.
Yes, it was.
In Adelaide.
Yes.
It was a special building that's not there anymore.
It was actually the motor vehicles building, and we went down into the cloisters.
Right, okay.
So it was rather good fun for 8-year-olds growing up. And I was there until I did my matric art, and I was there until I was about 15 when I finished that.
And so then you went on to further your education as well.
I did.
What was your ambition to be?
Well, I knew I didn't want to just stay in the textiles. I wanted to become a teacher because from the age of 4, I had this desire to become a teacher. So that's what I trained as.
And where did you train?
In Adelaide, in Kintore Avenue, at the teachers' college there. The building's still there, but I don't think it's still there as a teacher's college.
So how long did you train to be a teacher?
I was 2 years in training, and then I went out teaching in Bondon for 3 years.
To where?
Bonded.
Oh, you were bonded, a bonded teacher. Can you explain what that is?
Well, when they pay you to go to teachers' college, which was a pittance, but that was still considered money, and of course, when you haven't got any money coming in, it was something. And then after that, you work, you are bonded, you have to work for 3 years as a teacher, and you were sent wherever the education department needed you. You had no say, or you could say your region, but that was it.
So where did they send you?
Well, I went to Lucendale.
So that was your first school?
Well, actually, I was sent to Kingston South East, but after a term in Kingston, which nearly broke my heart, I was sent to Lucendale because the woman there was leaving. So, and of course they did this, they shifted you wherever you were needed. So I spent the next 3 years at Lucendale.
And what ages were you teaching?
At that stage, I started off, well, I trained with the little ones, you know, the junior primary, which were about 5 to 8 or thereabouts. And then when Lucendale was an area school, so I sort of had to take whatever came along, and I even ended up with year 6 singing, which really I don't think was my field, but anyway, nevertheless, I did.
And then you moved to Enfield?
I did.
So how did you find that, going from the country to the more to the city?
Well, I suppose I'd grown up in the city, so I suppose it wasn't a big shock or anything like that. Mm. So, of course, that's where I met my late husband.
Yes, so tell us about meeting him.
Well, we had windows that looked over each other.
Bit of a romance going on, was there, through the windows.
Was quite a... My mother said, goodness, you haven't known him very long when we decided to get together. But anyway.
That was in 1963.
That's right.
Yes.
And then we married.
Yes. And tell us about what happened as a teacher when you married. What did the education department do?
Well, you had to stop work for 3 days because I was a woman. My husband could go on teaching, but not a woman. They had to stop. So that's what happened.
And then you had to re-enter the teaching.
Yes.
And then
with a married name.
But they penalised you, didn't they? Because you lost your...
You lost any super benefits or anything. You had
long
to start
service.
To get long service leave. I had to start again.
It's true. Yes. And I know over the years you tried to get the education department to acknowledge that.
That's right.
And they took no notice of you at all.
That's right. I even went to the teachers' union, and I was part of the teachers' union, but it still wasn't recognised.
So discrimination because you're a woman.
I'm afraid so, because you're a woman.
So while you were married to Dean and you were at Enfield, where did you go next?
Then we went to... I have to stop and think.
Maybe.
It was in the southeast.
Oh, you went back to the southeast?
We went back to the southeast. Who was the principal?
Doesn't matter.
Yes, no, it was in the southeast.
Okay, and you went back to TAFE?
Yes, but that was not while I was in the southeast. I actually taught while I was in the southeast again, but I then... When he was shifted to the Barossa Valley, and that's when I actually went to the TAFE again.
And in these days we call it TAFE, but it used to be called Adult Technical Further Education.
That's right. Mm.
And what was the courses that you did at that
place? Well, actually, we must have been in the city at one stage, although I think I came down to it, because it was a textile course. It was a 4-year course, and you actually learnt to construct clothes and from scratch.
Yes, and able to do designing.
Yes, yes.
And making as well at the same time.
And they had exams, and you had to have your clothes assessed. And
Did you do well with that?
Oh, I think I passed it. I don't really recall sort of how well, but... have known something.
When Dean was moved to the Barossa, he became a principal of a school.
That's right.
What school was that?
That was Sandy Creek.
Sandy Creek Primary School, yes. Mm-hmm. And you were teaching as well. Where were you?
I was teaching at Rosedale, which was up the way a bit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's where I met you.
Yes, that's where I met you, yes.
We were both teachers there. Okay, so...
Although before that, your mother was the librarian at the Sandy Creek School and with...
Yeah, she was the small schools librarian.
That's
all the little tiny schools in the Barossa. She would load her little car up with all sorts of goodies and drive to a little tiny school. And they would get very excited, and it was like Christmas when stuff all turned up for your classroom. And she did book week too.
Almost decidedly, and we'd all dress up, and it was really, really great.
One year she was a possum, and
yes.
So when you were here, whereabouts were you living when Dean was the principal?
Well, we started off in the schoolhouse, but by that time we had two children. And when they got up from the dining room table and their chair hit the wall, we decided really the room wasn't quite big enough. So we actually bought a house down in Gawler.
Gawler East.
Gawler East, that's right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you were, while this was going on, and teaching and children and husband, you still kept your interest in art and fashion and sewing.
That's right.
Where did you go to get more information about?
Well, I used the library in Gawler, and that was where I happened to meet the chief librarian, who was called Helen Hennessy.
Yes.
And she noticed what I was borrowing, and I was borrowing all these quilting books.
She started the conversation.
Yes, and she made mention of the fact, and I said, oh, yes, yes.
So you had similar interests.
Yes.
You developed a friendship between
Certainly.
The two of you.
Yes, we did.
So what, with this relationship, what did you decide might be a good idea?
This was once we'd got together, and with Pat too, we thought we can form a Gawler quilting circle. And at that stage, there was another person, and I think they leased the Wheat Sheaf in and said we could use it to have meetings in for the quilting group.
Mm-hmm. And how did you start off? Because you had to let people know that you'd had this great idea.
Well, I would say we advertised the fact. Probably
in
the Bunyip, I would say.
Yes, because I remember.
Yes.
And myself and my mum, we got very excited.
Yes.
And what was the first thing you did to try and encourage people to attend? You did something special. Do you remember? You showed films.
Oh yes, we did.
What films were they that you showed all the people assembled in the... I think we were in the Institute reading room.
Yes. To tell you honest truth, I can't really remember what they were.
I can remember one, and it was American.
Right.
And this lady was doing patchwork.
Oh, Amish.
Then there was the Amish. There were two films. Mm. One was the Amish. Mm. One was the just plain American people doing patchworking and things like that. And Helen and you and that said, we can do this, you can join and make a club and meet at the Wheat Sheaf and things like that.
Yes.
And instead of a few people, what happened when you didn't do that?
Well, we had quite a few come to the point where we had to make sure there was enough room for them.
Yeah, but I can remember sort of that people were standing at the back. There were all women were standing at the back, you know, getting very excited about this and seeing the film, and it was inspirational.
That's right.
Yes, and Helen would have got those films from somewhere to show.
Yes, I guess, yes. That's probably too long ago to really remember that.
Yeah. It didn't happen straight away, but it sort of evolved.
Mm.
Did it involve... Do you remember actually starting at the Wheat Sheaf?
I had pictures within that group of women who were very keen on doing this sort of work. There was one that was a photographer, not a professional one, just a very interested person taking photos. And she took copious quantities of photos. So we all had good copies of her photos. And so I had photos of the beginning and, you know, all the things in the wheat sheet.
She recorded for so many years all the events and the meetings the people. And then finally, the exhibitions.
That's right.
The inaugural Gawler Quilting Circle exhibition in the Gawler South Hall.
Yes.
That was our very first one.
Yes.
Yes, and we're all new.
That's right.
We were very excited.
Yes.
And it was wonderful having all our stuff up on the walls.
Yes.
And
what year was that?
This would have been...
This is early 1980s.
80s. Yeah. Yes.
But also you couldn't stop there. You went and joined another quilting group. Who was that?
Was that the one in
Adelaide,
yes.
The Guild.
That's right. I was part of that one, but from Gawler, we were living in Gawler, and it meant travelling down, and they had their meetings at night. And I found this rather wearing, so I didn't continue that. And that's where the idea of meeting in Gawler came about.
Oh, right. Mm. Yes, but you did join the...
Oh, yes, I was definitely a member.
The Guild for many years, I think.
Many years, and I exhibited with them.
Yes, got to a point where it was so big they were having exhibitions put on at Wayville.
That's right, absolutely.
And that became bigger and bigger and bigger. The last one we went to was... fantastic. There were so many people there, and all the exhibition was beautiful.
Mm.
So you started doing workshops?
I did start doing workshops because people required it.
Mm.
And I took a lot of workshops. And there was a fabric store in the valley where she sold fabric and so on.
Was that Heather Barch?
Heather Barch, yes. Yeah. So she asked me whether I'd give classes up there, which I did. I did a lot of that.
I did, because I went to some of your classes.
I know. And, of course, this encouraged people to, you know, sort of keep going and produce quilts.
We used as a workshop venue, one of them was the Gawler TAFE.
That's right.
Building.
Yes.
I can remember doing at least two workshops there.
We even, well, I was thinking of exhibitions too, we actually had them in the Information Centre, and then we even had the one at Tanunda too.
Yes.
The Civic Centre.
And so a lot of these workshops that you gave were on a Saturday?
Presumably they were on a Saturday.
Yeah. And I've got written down here that the first one that you did was Grandmother's Flower Garden.
That's right, absolutely.
Everybody starts with Grandma's Flower Garden because it's hexagons.
I still have it.
I've still got mine as well, actually. The Grandmother's Flower Garden is just a series of hexagonal shapes then stitched together, often using paper underneath. That was called paper piercing.
That's right, paper piecing.
Mm. Yes, mm. And I think everybody started with the very traditional things like flower gardens and what have you, that looking back now it seems so sort of ordinary when you especially think of what you have achieved since then. So then you had another idea of joining another group, another guild. So you had the Patchwork Guild and then you had the Embroiderers Guild.
Oh, yes, because to start with, they didn't meet at night. And by that time, I had actually retired from teaching. Therefore, I really wasn't looking to do, you know, if I was going to do any work at night, it was my own work, stitching at home and so on. But anyway, so I joined the Embroiderers Guild. And I started adding embroidery to the, well, actually it's layered work really, patchwork is, because it's technically two layers, but you can have three, a top layer, a middle layer, and an underneath layer.
Yes.
So, of course, embroidery actually enhances that.
And plus the hand quilting as well.
Plus the hand quilting, most decidedly.
Not only as a design, but also that it's important to keep the three layers together.
Most decidedly. Yeah. And actually, if you use hand quilting, which is hand stitching, it actually raises the surface of, like, the part you're stitching becomes lower and then the other part becomes higher. Yeah. Therefore, it sort of forms a lovely
pillowing effect,
yes,
really, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it does.
Yes. Okay, so the guild then, where did they first meet in Adelaide?
They actually met in Unley, in some little rooms just off Unley Road. They were community centre rooms, very, very basic.
Then how did they manage to get so much money that they could buy a house at, like, Mile End there somewhere?
One person actually had enough sort of idea to... She lent the deposit to the Embroiderers Guild and they put a deposit down on this place at Mile End, Hugh Street, Mile End. And it is still there.
And still being used.
Still being used. And advantage with that one was there was... It had belonged to a... I think it was a sign writer. And there was a sort of a big building at the back, which probably was pretty basic at that stage. But they were able to turn it into a gallery, which is now used as a workroom.
Mm. And while you were at the Embroiderers Guild, you took it upon yourself to have one thing was the Museum of
That's
Embroidery.
Right. That's right.
Tell me about how you got involved with that and what did you do with the Museum of the Embroidery?
Well, you see, by that time, I actually was visiting overseas a lot, therefore collecting a lot of embroidery from various countries that I visited. Some I had taught in, some I just visited, including all places like there was America and there was England, there was, or you know, sort of Europe, a lot of places. And I was able to sort of use these ideas
and become knowledgeable about a lot of these ideas from
absolutely
all over the world. You travelled really all over the world.
All over the world. My husband, actually, his job took us all over the world.
Yes, because we haven't mentioned that Dean actually died.
That's right, he did die.
And then you remarried with Ian.
That's right.
And he was a professor, was he?
Yes, of electrical engineering.
Electrical engineering. And he travelled to places like India and things like that with his designs for
railways.
Railways for saving fuel railway trains.
Yes.
And so while he was all doing that, what were you doing?
I spent a lot of time having in libraries, beautiful libraries, full of textile books and also fabric shops, especially at one stage it was over in Japan. And that was like a, you know, in a lolly shop with all the beautiful fabrics.
Yes, and you became a teacher as a textile artist, an educator. Why did you go down that road? Do you still wanted to teach?
Teaching's in me. Much to my mother's amazement, at four I announced I was going to be a teacher. She said, yes, darling, that's very nice.
Okay, so then with the museum, you were involved. It was very intricate, but did you design the museum? Because I've been in there and it's beautifully done in all this beautiful wood. And then it's got all these narrow drawers which all come out and there's some of the exquisite embroidery in there is like irreplaceable.
I wasn't sort of involved in that side of it, mm-hmm. really. I mean, I was involved in mounting embroideries and that sort of thing for the museum, but not in the actual designing of the museum. I left that to other people.
Right, okay. So then you decided within your teaching practice that you wanted to start off something a bit more formal, and you started a certificate course. Can you tell us about that?
I certainly did, because I felt, you see, part of my learning was in design, and part of my love is designing my own things. And of course I wanted to get this over to other people because I found they were copying things, and if I could actually get them to design things for themselves. So I developed this course, which was designing for themselves, which people consider to be a bit scary, but I was able to, being a teacher, I was able to sort of encourage them. And actually, that took me to lots and lots of places.
You went around Australia teaching.
Around Australia, even New Zealand, Tasmania. I went all over the place with that, just teaching.
Teaching workshops and teaching skills.
Yes, teaching skills.
And teaching them to design for themselves and not
absolutely.
Just take a pattern and copy it.
Absolutely, because I was really keen on them designing for themselves, because it's not that easy, but they had to have somewhere to start. And so I was able to give them sort of, you know, ideas on how to start, and then they could go from there. And that's been very successful.
But you went further than that. You started online teaching as well.
That's right.
So how did that work?
Actually, I think was that when my son was, because he's a computer, one of them's a computer programmer, and I think that's when he started getting that online, I think. From memory.
And you made many friends around Australia of people who were wanting to have, they were thirsty for this information.
Absolutely.
And teaching that, you know, and it inspired them to go on and make beautiful works of art, just as you had done.
Right.
Yeah, and they were from all over Australia.
All over Australia.
And do you still do that now?
Well, actually, I've got to the point where at my age, my last...
Yeah, you can say.
At 84, I've pulled the plug at the end of this year from the certificate course. I have announced that I'm actually retiring. And I think at this stage, having been a co-convener of the certificate course since 2016, I thought I'd actually earned my retirement.
But then you went on to give yourself another job with your artwork because you came in contact with a travel agency.
That's
right. What happened then?
Well, at that stage, yes, a very, very keen travel agency, and asked whether I would be able to take groups of people who were interested in textiles and to various places, including India, Morocco,
Bhutan.
Bhutan, yes, that's right. And so, of course, that really, really lovely. And I did love and got to know so many people in India, and I knew them very well.
You mixed with many ethnic groups around the world. What did you do when you met these women from around the world that were doing textile work?
I was able to encourage them to actually teach techniques to these people who came on the trips.
Yeah. And did you learn things as well?
I would say I would have.
I think one of the famous ones I can think of is where you learnt how to put mirrors.
Oh, yes.
Like in India and places like that, the textile have these very shiny...
Shisha mirrors.
Are they shisha?
That's right.
And they embroider them into the fabric.
And they were the genuine ones because they actually made their own mirrors, and then they cut them up with huge scissors. Hardly the thing you do with scissors, but anyway, that seemed to be done. And these shishas were applied with embroidery. And, of course, I loved that.
In the Embroiderers Guild, they've got video of you, and you're sitting down with a person, and she's actually teaching you how to do the embroidery and putting the mirrors inside.
Yes.
And you're explaining, has close-ups of your hands, and you actually see the needle going in and out, and you're explaining, you can hear your voice saying, you know, you do it like this and you do it like that.
Yes.
And they've actually got that as sort of, that's going to stay with the Embroiderers Guild really forever as long as it exists. And so your teaching is going to go on beyond you eventually.
Which is right, which is lovely.
It is lovely. Yeah. With the travel agency one, taking groups of people. You didn't have to do all the organising.
No, I didn't have to do the paperwork or anything like that. But I did find the people. That wasn't very hard either. But they were from the various guilds and so on, and they advertised, and therefore that's how we got our people to go.
How many people would be in a group?
About, I think, 15 to 20.
Hmm. So they're quite big groups, really?
Quite big groups, yes.
And how many times do you reckon you took a group over?
I lost count. Because I did it a lot.
It says 10 to 11 times at least.
At least, yes.
And taking these groups of people to different parts of the world.
That's right. And it was quite, you know, because it involved quite a bit of organisation on my behalf just to sort of organise these people to get where they're going. I mean, the travel agent did their fair bit, but just to get people organised, because they'd consult me on, you know, what do you have to take in the way of clothing, and I'd supply them with a list. And
you would have made many friends from those women who went with you to all these different places. And you still keep in contact with some of those women?
I would have imagined. Like, I'd have to think about that.
So are you still doing the certificate courses?
And that's what I'm retiring from at the
yes,
end of
all
the
right.
year.
So yeah. You were the co-convener for it.
I was actually, to start with, my sister-in-law, Carol Mullen, and myself started up the group as conveners. And then Carol left to go up to the valley, and so I was left as the convener of the group. And then I was joined by Christine Bishop, who is also, she has shared that with me as co-convener.
But not only adults, you actually run workshops and courses for children.
That's right, because the Embroiderers Guild has a young embroiderers called the Junior Embroiderers, and it's called GEMS, actually. And I have taught them too.
You've taught that for many years?
Oh, for a certain number of years.
Your teaching and influence, you must have reached so many people.
I would think so. I would hope so, because that was my ambition.
Yeah. But a couple of years ago, a surprise happened. One of your friends nominated you.
Oh, yes.
What did she nominate you for?
It was for my involvement for the OAM, which is the Order of Australia Medal, for my involvement in textile arts.
So it's like services to the arts?
That's right. And she had to collect a lot of information. Therefore, I was asked for information, and so were the various guilds and what have you. And after 2 years of collecting information, this is my friend Heather. Well, she was Heather Wright. Mm. And she collected enough for me to be awarded my OAM, which was then presented by the
Governor.
Governor, yes, at Government House in Adelaide.
Also, you are a published artist as well. You have had a lot of your work in different magazines. I can think of one was called Embellish.
That's right. And Textile Fibre Forum.
Yes.
I had a lot of work what was in Embellish to start with. Mm. And then it was also Textile Fibre Forum. Well, it was actually under the one umbrella. And, yes, I did have a lot of work there.
So one of the key things is, though, that one of your sons is a professional photographer. So what does he do to help you?
Well, actually, the photos he takes have always spoken rather well of my work. I'm still benefiting from it.
Photographs in the magazines are always beautiful.
That's right. So I have had an advantage because he is a very good commercial photographer.
But you've also been involved with all the guilds setting up their big exhibitions in Wayville that, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people going to.
That's right. I was actually involved in one not so long ago.
Yes, so I know you were actually there.
Yes.
Selling raffle tickets or
yes, something like that.
And there was a big exhibition that used to go sort of like yearly with the Dare to Differ.
Actually, I was involved with that.
Mm. And that was people, I guess, trying to do experimental textile work.
Yes.
So that's why it was called Dare to Differ. Be different, do something really original.
Yes, because as I've said before, I really, you know, was all for people designing their own, and then I brought this into the Dare to Differ because I wanted them to actually design. For themselves.
Not just copy things.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Well, now, looking back over your really creative and exciting textile journey, what advice would you give to people who are just beginning to perhaps think, oh, I might be able to do something like that?
Yes, I think people feel that they can't do it. So I actually encourage them to say, look, you can, and just sort of, you know, forget that you can't do these sort of things, because everyone is capable of doing them. It's just that they have this barrier of, oh, I can't do something like that. You have to start somewhere, and I've done a lot of work on that.
I agree with that. Certainly seen that over the years. So where are you putting your enthusiasm now?
Well, I am part of the Royal Society for Art for South Australia, and I'm now painting textiles, and then I'm stitching them. Not that stitching is part of their knowledge yet, but they have allowed fabric to creep into their work. They used to have it on sort of canvas, but they are allowing that now, thanks to another friend who got that through when she was the president. Anyway, I'm working on that and stitching them too and putting them in the exhibition.
So you're not totally retired?
Well, no, I'm just taking another slight branch.
I don't think you could ever stop.
Probably not.
I don't think you could, no.
No, I don't.
And how do you see the future as far as this, the art forms of embroidery and textile art? Have you got a rosy feeling about the future?
Well, I only hope that I can continue to influence the doing their own designs and thinking like that, because people, I'm afraid, see some design and they will copy it. And if I can just encourage people to not do that, they don't have to. I do belong to another group at the Embroiderers Guild called No Limits, which actually speaks for itself. And in that group, there are no limits, and they think according to the way I think too.
So that's quite exciting.
Yes.
Idea and yes. Something a bit new.
Yes.
And sounds like lots of enthusiasm.
A lot of enthusiasm. And the person that actually encouraged me to go to the Royal Society for Art for SA, she is part of this. In fact, she's the chair or at the helm at the present moment, and she is very keen.
That's good.
Yes.
So you're looking forward to the future and what
I might
produce next?
Who knows?
Thank you, Barbara. It's lovely listening to your story.
Thank you, Jill. It's been lovely to be able to impart it.
Okay. Thank you.
This interview, recorded by the Gawler Broadcasting Association, is available for download for purposes of educational research. We expect that any written or electronic work derived from the recording gives due credit to the interviewee, interviewer, and GBA.